This is Fresh Air. Carol Phillips has written about the African diaspora from different perspectives. His new novel, Crossing the River, tells the story of slavery through the eyes of the descendants of one man, an African father who has had to sell his children into slavery. The book was shortlisted for the English Literary Award, the Booker Prize. Phillips' previous novel, Cambridge, was set on a West Indies plantation. The Final Passage was about a West Indian couple that migrates to London. Phillips' collection of essays, The European Tribe, was about his reflections on his experiences as a black man traveling through Europe. Phillips was born in the West Indies and grew up in England. Let's start with a reading from the beginning of his new novel, Crossing the River. The opening is in the voice of an African father 250 years ago.
A desperate foolishness. The crops failed. I sold my children. I remember I led them, two boys and a girl, along weary paths until we reached the place where the mudflats are populated with crabs and gulls. I watched as they huddled together and stared up at the fort above which flew a foreign flag. In the distance stood the ship into whose keep I would soon condemn them. The man and his company were waiting to once again cross the bar. We watched a while and then approached. Three children only. I jettisoned them at this point where the tributary stumbles and swims out in all directions to meet the sea. I soiled my hands with cold goods in exchange for their warm flesh. A shameful intercourse. I could feel their eyes upon me, wondering why.
Tell me why you wanted to start your book, to frame your book, with the agony and guilt of an African father who sells his children into slavery. I mean, I don't think we usually think about African families sharing in the responsibility for slavery.
Well, that's precisely why I wanted to start it with that. One of the spurs to writing the book, certainly, was to examine some of the paradoxes, some of the ironies, some of the facts about slavery which have been hitherto, I think, hidden beneath the received history, which is perpetrated in schools, in textbooks, on television, and you know, the guilt of Africans, not just then, this father speaks in my novel from a historical perspective of about 250 years ago, but I think the residual and continuing difficult relationship that Africa has with the those of the African diaspora in the West is something that I'm very interested in.
The story that interested me the most in your novel, Crossing the River, is the first story about a freed slave who becomes a missionary, a Christian missionary, and is sent to Africa to missionize there. And then his former owner and adoptive father, who worries about him, goes in search of him. The story here is that the former slave joined something called the American Colonization Society, which had a policy of repatriating former slaves back to the west coast of Africa and sending them there as missionaries. What I found interesting is that, you know, you're creating a story here where an African who becomes a slave in America goes back to Africa, and Africa is at this point so foreign to him that he can't take the climate. He can't take the illnesses that go around there. Nearly the whole first shipload of former slaves die when they get to Africa of malaria.
Well, this that was actually very factual. That's exactly what happened when the United States began a policy in the early 19th century of trying to repatriate freed African slaves in an attempt to solve the problem, in inverted commas, of slavery. What actually did happen is our first boatload, nearly everybody did die of malaria. People were thoroughly underprepared for coping with the physical as well as the cultural and psychological impact of arriving on the west coast of Africa. What really spurred me to write that section of the novel, though, was during the period when I was initially beginning to conceive of this book, Liberia was ripped asunder with a terrible and bloody civil war, a civil war which really hasn't ended to this day. And one of the facts which caused this civil war to emerge in Liberia was the conflict which had been engendered in the bosom of that society by the policy of repatriating African people of African origin in America back. The society was split right up until the 1980s between those who considered themselves perhaps to be rather superior to the native Africans simply on the basis that they were the descendants of the slaves who'd gone back to Liberia in the early 19th century.
Why did you want to send the plantation owner, Nash's former owner and then adoptive father, why did you want to send him to Africa in search of Nash?
Well, I thought that one of the, again, great paradoxes of the slave trade was the degree to which we don't often read about the affection, the love, if you will, which was engendered between black and white on the plantations. I don't think you can put any group of people together, irrespective of their ethnic or socio-historical origin, put them together in a laboratory, which is, after all, what a plantation was, a social-economic laboratory, without the real humanity of these people coming to the fore, which, and humanity, obviously a deep part of humanity, is the capacity to love, the capacity to feel deep affection. I was interested in, you know, that relationship between a master and a former slave, which wasn't draped in, you know, in adjectives to do with exploitation and brutality. I was interested in somebody who felt so deeply for his former slave, in spite of what this slave was, or maybe because of what this slave was, so deeply for this character that he was prepared to risk his own life and his own health to follow him across the ocean.
Do you think that some people will perceive your novel as, excuse the expression, politically incorrect because you're trying to...
I hope so. I mean, I'm not a particular... I'm not a particular advocate of some of the more rigorous and I think slightly comical, except it's not comical for those people who've lost their jobs or those people who feel they've been their discourse, if you like, is being policed. But some of the aspects of political correctness I find thoroughly absurd. One of the areas which I've been not accused of, but I mean people have whispered about, is this area called cultural appropriation, where a writer might write in the voice or the consciousness of somebody who is considered to be beyond their jurisdiction, i.e., in my case, writing in the voice or the consciousness of a white female or a white male or a black female. The logical extension of that type of reductive thought is, are we as writers supposed to merely write in the voice and the consciousness of people who look like us? I mean, surely, after all, it's the role of a writer to dare to imagine his or herself into the lives of other people, people who don't look like them.
Carol Phillips is my guest. His new novel about slavery is called Crossing the River. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with writer Carol Phillips. You grew up in London, but you were born on an island in the West Indies that your parents were from. What do you know about how your family got to the West Indies?
Well, that's sort of points a finger quite cunningly at an area which I feel very frustrated about. In the early 80s, or maybe 81, I'm not sure, the courthouse in St. Kitts burned to the ground, and with it went most of the island records.
Wow.
Now, I have a feeling that if that courthouse had not burned to the ground, I would have spent large parts of the last 10 years excavating the records there, not just for my own personal history and to trace my own personal journey through my family to that island, but I think for stories, for material that might become the germ of future work. As it is, it is quite frustrating because I'm not able to really trace back beyond my great-grandmother. My great-grandmother died only a few years ago, but she was somebody who I was able to sit down and talk to about her grandmother who was a slave, but you know, she was an old lady, her memory was fading, so it's pretty much, I'm afraid, an area of darkness for me, my own personal journey across the water to St. Kitts.
How much did your parents care about whether they knew or not?
I think my parents were more concerned, to be honest, with fitting into British society. They were migrants from the Caribbean, like many other West Indians in the 50s and early 60s. They migrated to Britain for economic reasons, for social reasons. They wanted to get better jobs. They certainly wanted their children to have more of an opportunity growing up in a society which could offer them not only good secondary but also tertiary education in university and so on. So they tended, like a lot of immigrants, not to look over their shoulder.
Were there many black people where you were when you were growing up?
Not really. One of the determining factors in my childhood in England was race, but almost as great a determining factor in the way in which I interacted with the society and the way in which I perceived myself was class, because I grew up in the north of England. I grew up in London as well, but mainly in the north of England as a working class kid. And, you know, British society is so stratified race obviously plays a part, but class really does play a huge role as well. And I went at 18 to Oxford University speaking with a pretty strong working class blue collar accent. And that was at least as much of a problem, in inverted commas, a problem for my peer group looking at me, as was the fact that I happen to be black as well.
Now, you've written that you didn't read a book by a black author until you came to the United States.
No, I didn't.
And you were already, in your early 20s or late teens?
I was 20. I came to the United States during my time as a student. I had one more year to go at college, and I came over here and basically traveled around on a Greyhound bus, much in the same manner as most students do. And it was only then that I picked up a book. It was Native Son by Richard Wright, and I was in California at the time. And what drew me to the book was not the name of Richard Wright. I'd never heard of him. What drew me to the book was a picture of a young black man's face on the cover, and I thought, this was a young black man who looked more or less my age, my generation, and I picked up the book and I began to read it. And I remember being shocked, being surprised, being elated, being slightly hurt. I mean, the latter feeling, the hurt, was a sense of resentment that I'd managed to grow up in England all these years and nobody had had the common sense to offer me a book that was written by a black author. I was studying English literature at Oxford, and not one of my tutors, nowhere on the syllabus, was there any hint, any indication that a black author had ever penned a book.
But you didn't know about any of the black authors on your own and independently try to seek them out?
No, I didn't. I grew up in a rather sort of traditional, blinkered way and went to definitely a very traditional and blinkered university in which, the idea of, introducing somebody like Richard Wright or James Baldwin or Langston Hughes or V.S. Naipaul or Derek Walcott or any of these people into the syllabus was obviously something that had either never occurred to them or it struck them as being anathema. So I began to make these discoveries for myself as a result of having been in the United States.
So was that what made you think about becoming a writer?
Yeah, because it was, I'd already had in my mind, to be honest, the idea that I'd like to do something in the arts, maybe something in theater, maybe something in television. But I didn't have any example or any model of a person or a writer whom I might emulate, somebody who had perhaps tilled the soil before me and might make it easier for me to follow. And once I discovered Wright, and as a result of Wright, Baldwin and Ellison and Toni Morrison and the then contemporary writers, Alice Walker and so on, I began to realize that there was a whole fictional area in which black people played a full and active life, a determining role in some cases, and there was no reason why I shouldn't begin to perceive of myself as a potential writer.
When you first came to the United States, were you surprised at all of the, expectations that both white people and black people had of you as a black man, or as a black man from England, or a black man from England whose family was from the West Indies. Did you find that there were a different set of expectations here?
I found that what happened was when people looked at me initially, they usually assumed I was an American.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because of the way in which I dressed or looked or whatever. I mean, certainly it wasn't possible, and it probably still isn't to this day possible. I don't wear a deerstalker or a monocle, so they don't see me as particularly British. When I open my mouth, of course, then I think there's a different set of expectations.
Do you know what the differences are?
Well, I sometimes find that people begin to talk to me as if somehow I had no affinity whatsoever with an African American, as if they talked to me as though I was Alistair Cook or something. They were just able to explore the sort of cousin relationship between, I'm an American talking to you as a Briton about these African Americans. They're a bit of a problem, but we get on with them. And, you know, I sometimes think, well, don't they understand that obviously I feel a deep affinity with African Americans because, you know, we come out of the same historical boat, as it were, both literally and metaphorically.
Carol Phillips. His new novel is called Crossing the River. He directs the writing program at Amherst College one semester a year and divides the rest of his time between London and St. Kitts in the West Indies. This is Fresh Air.